and welcome to Avon Talks, the affiliate marketing podcast. I'm your host, Rob Davidson, and on today's episode, we're talking tracking with Avon's expert in this field, Stephen Short. Tracking is one of the central pillars of any affiliate marketing program. It underpins how you measure and attribute the value of your ad spend, and so it's of fundamental importance. Yet in today's world, it's a topic that is fraught with complexity and constantly changing according to needs and wishes of regulators, consumers, and tech gatekeepers like Google and Apple. So I sat down with Stephen to unravel some of those complexities and to have him shed some light on the subject and what all of these profound changes mean for those of us working in the affiliate industry. We run through everything from ATT and ITP to GDPR and S2S. And if those acronyms don't mean anything to you, don't worry, because Stephen's on hand to provide an explanation for all of them. I think you'll find it a really interesting discussion. And if you're keen to understand more about the tracking options that Avon offers our clients, then I'll include a link to some of the useful resources we have on the blog page for this episode. Hi, Stephen. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today. I think this is your debut for Avon Talks, isn't it?
It is, yes. Thanks for having me.
Is this your first podcast generally as an appearance?
Yes, I'm not a regular podcast appearance. This is my first.
Well, let's see how it goes. I wanted to introduce you first to the audience. And so I just wondered if you could give us a bit of background around you, how you came to Avon, what you're doing before maybe, and just describing how you came to be in your current role, obviously, at the company as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was raised in Northern England, as you might have heard from my accent or gathered that. Growing up, I was always interested in sort of technology, app development, stuff like that. So, you know, playing around on the side and building some things of my own. I moved to London around 10 years ago, I guess. Maybe a bit too much. But I moved to London to study computer science. And it was actually while I was studying that, an Avon talent manager or affiliate window at the time came in and did a talk about internship opportunities at Avon, again, affiliate window. And that actually led to me doing a sandwich year, doing the degree in the technical services department. So I did a year there. That was great. And went back to study. And while doing that, I was doing part-time in the engineering department as a software developer. So building some bespoke solutions for clients and bug fixes and stuff like that. On conclusion of the degree, I came back full-time and as a software developer. And for about a year then there was an opportunity that arose in the product department for just a product manager role. So that initially was in sort of our partnerships team, so looking after matchmaking, I guess, on the platform, publish applications, advertiser invitations, and the sort of platform UI element of it. But I always sort of had an interest for the tracking side of affiliate marketing. So the sort of big challenges that's come with the scale. At the time, it was just about the scale. Now we talk about other challenges like privacy and cookies and just the ability to track. But that led me going towards the tracking department, and that's where I sit now. So the sort of tracking team within our product department.
Yeah, and so it was originally as a product manager as well, wasn't it, that you were in that role when you picked up the award for the Best Industry Newcomer? What was the actual official title for the award?
Rising Star, I think it is.
Rising Star, that's the one. So how did you find that process of kind of going through that interview and assessment as far as the industry kind of veterans are concerned?
Yeah, it was an interesting process because I think, I guess through the last few years at least, it was very much, I guess, a client services award. The types of candidates going towards that were very much from that background, so it was quite different. And I think also the judges liked that element to it, you know, that we're seeing something wider from the pool that they don't normally see. So yeah, that was super interesting. Bit more nerve-wracking, obviously not used to doing those types of presentations, at least at the time. But yeah, it was a super interesting process and rewarding. Yeah.
Going back to your kind of current role at the moment, what is it, do you think, that kind of interested you in specifically getting into that product area and specifically around the kind of area of tracking? Was there something that was a kind of a big pull for you, personally speaking?
Yeah, early on, I guess, it was a question of scale. So, you know, if tracking goes down, our ability to measure sales goes down, then we are immediately losing money as a business. We're losing money for our partners. We're losing all this visibility and reporting stuff. So the challenges around that was what initially drew me, the scale we're operating sort of around the globe. But that was quite, I think we're talking about like 2017, around about then. So the first version of ITP had just come out as well. And, you know, I think everyone could see a trend. I could certainly see a trend. I think everyone could see a trend that this was only going one way and just going to get stricter and stricter. The first version was quite light. So it was those types of challenges that actually drew me into the tracking service. And obviously since then, we've had even more challenges.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you about that. I mean, how would you broadly categorize the evolution in tracking that we've seen in the digital ad marketing space over the last, I don't know, decade or so? Because it feels like, from my perspective, I mean, I've worked at Awin for almost 10 years, and I was working for an affiliate prior to coming to the network. And when I initially kind of made my first foray into the industry, it felt like tracking was a relatively static, relatively simple setup, and you kind of set it up, it would generally tend to work relatively well, and you didn't really have to think about it too much. Whereas now it feels like it's a very fluid scenario with constant changes, whether that's coming from regulatory perspectives or from browsers or, you know, other tech gatekeepers, for instance. And it's really changed in that period of time.
Yeah, I sort of categorize it in three generations of tracking, I guess. You've got the sort of first 10 years, so the inception of affiliate marketing, I think around the year 2000, where you'd literally just add a snippet to your page, a pixel, and it would measure everything. And I guess therein lies the problem as well. It could measure everything. So of the 2010 decade, you've got a move towards first-party scripts and setting a first-party cookie. So I think Awin came up with a solution around 2011. And it was, you know, a default integration, but it wasn't necessarily mandatory. But from that, it being the default integration, there's a really good adoption of it, which has protected us towards the end of the decade when, you know, we've started to have these browser changes. But thinking forward,
this is the original master tag integration.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the ability to set that cookie on the advertiser's domain, you know, when that was conceived, I guess ITP wasn't even a thing, but it's sort of come into its own, just having that adoption and that function on advertisers' websites. But looking forward, I guess we've got sort of the third generation of tracking is what I see, which is less of a footprint from the ad network, so more direct journeys between publishers and advertisers, and also moving away from the sort of on-page presence, so pixels and scripts towards a server-to-server tracking, as we call it.
Yeah, we'll get to some of that actually shortly in the conversation, but first of all, what do you think, like, when you're comparing affiliate tracking, and obviously that takes various forms now, but generally speaking, if you were to characterize the types of tracking that affiliate conducts as opposed to other types that you see across other elements of the digital advertising industry, how would you distinguish it?
I guess affiliate marketing has always been concerned with more the publisher than the consumer. So primarily we care about what website referred you. And that links up to a publisher on the platform. A lot of other channels, well, not a lot of channels, but, you know, a big part of the digital advertising industry cares a lot about the consumer. So their primary, you know, goal is to build a profile view to make their advertising relevant, and that's following you across the internet, which is where the problems start to come. But I'd say again, yeah, the big difference here is affiliate marketing can function if we know which publisher referred you. A lot of the other channels can't function unless they know who you are, which I think we're in a better position there with that.
Yeah. Do you think that we've done a good enough job at actually making that distinction or communicating that distinction at an industry level, particularly beyond our own industry, when we're kind of talking about the value of affiliate?
It's mixed. I guess in some territories as well, a large part of the affiliate space is using sort of promotional methods, display and programmatic partners. So there's that challenge there as well with the differentiation. as well, just the technology we've been using, you know, it's hard to, I guess, explain to some of our partners the differences between our channel and others' channels if we're still using this, if we're still affected by the same sort of ITP updates because the same technology is being used. So for me, it's moving away from that technology so we're not affected, and then those conversations become easier as well. You know, we're not affected by ITP, we don't do this type of behavior.
As with many parts of the industry, it is obviously very acronym heavy. You've already mentioned a few of the acronyms that get bandied around and thrown around a lot within this industry, and particularly within this particular space. So I'm now going to suggest, or I'd say, a series of tracking related acronyms. And what I'd like is to get your take on each of these and how they're currently affecting the affiliate industry. So it's kind of like a ask me anything type AMA type thing, but you can assume that I'm an idiot. So we'll call it AIAI instead. And just give me the basic kind of overview on them. So yeah, first one is a big one, GDPR, and I've kind of included CCPA in that. I mean, it goes for all kind of local regulations, but GDPR was the instigator for a lot of the local regulations. What's your take on that and the implications it's had for tracking?
Yeah, I guess just from a consumer perspective, it's annoying as hell. Like, all these cookie windows coming up, it reiterates this disconnect between, you know, the legislators and the technologists, and they rarely sync up. So, you know, we have this situation now, whichever website you go on, you get spam with cookie windows. And you get spam with cookie windows as well because the same mechanism that's used to store your consent can be used to track you. So the consent status is deleted. So the next time you visit the website, you get it again. So it's just this disconnect for me. In terms of tracking, you know, consent's required for the vast majority of promotion activity, unless, you know, the consumer is getting something from that journey. So when we think of some promotional types like discounting and cashback, where the consumer expect that service, then consent is slightly different there. But yeah, in terms of impact on the industry, publishers and advertisers should be getting consent for any information and storage on that's come from their site.
Now, you mentioned ITP a couple of times in our conversation earlier. That's my next acronym to throw at you.
Yeah, ITP, so that's Intelligent Tracking Prevention. It's an initiative by Apple to reduce cross-site tracking, essentially. Now, of course, their primary motivation, again, has been around carrying across profiles of consumers across different websites. But affiliates can very easily be caught in this because you're going through a centralized tracking domain. So you're linking out to one website, which is your sort of affiliate network, and they're linking to the advertiser. And Apple see that this middleman here, the ad network, has a bit too much visibility over the consumer's journey. So they implement restrictions around that. So right now the solution is, I guess we'll come on to another acronym, S2S. In terms of impact, yeah, it's moving towards first party solutions. I think we still see whispers of things to come on ITP in terms of getting stricter. So
yeah. Well, here's another Apple one for you. So ATT, more recent from them.
Yeah. This was an interesting one as well. Like, there's a bit of a disconnect with ATT. I guess this is, again, coming back to like Apple and Google being gatekeepers of the industry. There's a bit of a disconnect between what Apple implemented and what the actual rules are in some of the territories. So GDPR, for example. Again, this disconnect, you have this window pop up. I'm sure you've seen it, any iPhone users here. You have this window pop up and there's very little opportunity to customize that message. You have this like really boilerplate message that comes up, accept or deny, and it's, you know, that's tracking, that's anything, any data that leaves the phone, and immediately you're limiting opportunities there. The consumer's not really informed of what's going on there. And as well, Apple don't seem to have these distinctions around the types of activity provided to consumers, like what we talked about with cashback. So that exemption doesn't exist for sort of ATT IDFA, where the consumer might want to get some reward for this journey, some cashback, but Apple won't allow that. And with this, again, this boilerplate message that's coming up, I think you'll see a lot of frustrated consumers as well, where journeys can't be measured without this consent.
What is shifting from Apple to Google's perspective now? And I know that this has gone through various revisions, and I think it's currently still up for debate, but the next acronym is FLOC. What does that mean to you?
So FLOC is a Federated Learning of Cohorts. I think I've nailed that acronym. I don't know. it's sort of moving away from cookies as an identifier across many websites and trying to move it a bit more aggregated. So towards what they call cohorts. So groups of users who share sort of interests. The problem with this, I guess, is straight away off the bat, all the other browsers have said they're not going to support this. So this is a problem. Browsers doing their own thing, moving at different speeds in terms of tracking privacy. As well as all the other major browsers saying they're not going to support it, we've seen some very large websites show concerns already. So WordPress, which powers around like 41% of sites on the internet, they might add this by default to opt out, so you can't use cohorts on their site. IKEA, Sky. And again, we're just in sort of a beta phase right now with this FLOC system. So it doesn't seem to be getting off on a good footing, but we'll see.
No, it's interesting as well, isn't it, that they're clearly moving away from the, as you were talking about earlier, the individual consumer targeting, and it is going back to almost an old school contextual-based targeting, but in a new kind of format that is browser-based. The next one, S2S.
So server-to-server, this is, it's primarily, you know, not adding tags and pixels to your page. You are posting back the sale information and any attribution information like the cookie back in a post back. So your server is talking directly to your ad network rather than posting something to the page, which is susceptible to being blocked with ad blocking or restricted with tracking protection. So yeah, this is something that it's going to be very hard for browsers to tackle this sort of method of attribution, which comes with its own problems. Like, could it be abused? Yes. But it's going to be very challenging. It removes sort of browsers from the equation in favor of direct sort of communication between ad networks and advertisers, retailers.
So, I mean, following on from server to server then, and this is obviously increasingly being adopted by many affiliate programs that provide that best-in-class tracking setup. Now, another solution that Awin developed recently, which you were heavily involved with, was bouncers tracking. So could you tell us a bit about how you came to develop that, what it is, and the problems that it solves?
Yeah, certainly. So bouncers tracking, following on from what I just said, I guess, it's about removing, having less people in play in the measurement of a journey. So browsers, let's get rid of them. But ad networks as well. Can we reduce the footprint that ad networks have in the journey? And if we sort of try and remove ourselves from the equation of the tracking journey, so remember what I said with ITP earlier, they see this one network has too much, sorry, it was one player in the middle of many different websites has too much visibility. So bouncers trying to remove ourselves from the equation, basically. So it favors direct journeys between publisher and advertiser websites. So publishers link out directly to the advertisers rather than to an ad network. And the attribution sort of happens in the background then. So on the publisher's website, a click ID is generated and it's connected on the advertiser's website just by that direct link. So this negates the need for third-party cookies, basically. Third-party cookies can be used across many different websites to continue that profile of a consumer. And this is just used as a single first-party cookie now on the advertiser's website rather than that additional third-party cookie that's been used, you know, for 20 years in affiliate marketing on the ad networks domain. So that was the goal of bouncers, really removing ourselves from the tracking equation and trying to satisfy some of the work that browsers have been doing at the same time. So, you know, I think some networks or some players in digital advertising, let's say, have really tried to work around Apple's solutions. So they've come up with stuff like cache tracking and stuff like this. And what's happened is in the next minor release of ITP, a few months later, they fixed it. And it's this cat and mouse game. So we're trying to escape this cat and mouse game, I guess, and keep in spirit of the changes by Safari and Firefox. So that was the motivation of bouncers, yeah.
And what's been the kind of early results that you've seen off the back of those partners and brands that have adopted it?
Yeah, so the primary, what was interesting about Bansys is, you know, initially we fixated on the fact that ITP wasn't going to kick in and restrict the cookie on the advertiser site to 24 hours. So you just have a attribution period of 24 hours. That was the initial selling point, but something that actually came from it was we were seeing speed was actually a major factor. So on slower internet connections, any additional sort of redirects, I don't think, can really, especially like, you know, if you're in a rural area on 4G, 3G, even 4G isn't that prominent, even though we're talking about 5G in some major cities. Any additional sort of hops in the journey can create a massive effect. So we've got like 3-4 seconds each on some internet connections. And that obviously massively increases the bounce rate. So people just leave journeys quickly and don't enter the advertiser. So that is actually the major thing that came from this as well. Optimizing for speed and not just, satisfying the ITP rules.
Yeah. Calling back to ITP and Flock and ATT and Apple and Google's privacy protection initiatives do seem to be moving towards a model that prevents, obviously, personal data being accessible beyond the specific locations which they control. So do you think this is the right way to go about preserving privacy from their perspective, from the industry's perspective, while still enabling advertising to actually to work and to function? Or do you think these are quite cynical attempts to take that additional level of control, in their role as industry gatekeepers? Because they obviously are able to move a lot faster. They have a lot more influence, arguably, than the regulators. So, you know, the regulators, it feels like, you know, you talked about a cat and mouse game. There's one going on, I think, also between regulators and these kind of gatekeepers as well.
Yeah, I think browsers can do a lot. So, or these vendors can do a lot. It's Google, Apple. So we talked about the cookie consent issues earlier. You know, I think there's some movement in this area, actually, recently. But what I'd love to see is browsers start to manage consent, so and persisting consent in a way that, you know, can't be abused for tracking, which is their big problem, which is why, you know, we get a cookie consent window every website load. So that I think browsers can do more around that, which would be really good and you know, massively improve the experience of just simply browsing on the internet. And I guess in terms of your earlier question, on device. First of all, we need standards. So we can't keep on with Apple and WebKit doing their own thing, Google and Chrome doing their own thing, Mozilla, and then Brave Browser completely doing their own thing as well. So standards there. And you can see this in the sort of community groups. Like, there's a lot of transparency on web standards. And you see the infighting between the different vendors. But, again, back to your original question, on-device learning is obviously the keeping more stuff on the device in terms of whether it's, you know, attributing a sale in a privacy-conscious way on the device, I think is a logical way to move forward, because it does prevent that abuse. But we do need standards. And I wouldn't like to see, for example, Google come up with a solution that, you know, you need to call their API, you need to go through their website, stuff like that. But if we're talking about stuff on the actual consumer's device that the consumer's in control of, for me, that's a logical way to go as well.
Okay, well, final question for you. I wanted to kind of look forward as far as the industry is concerned and ask you what you think the future of affiliate tracking actually looks like. And do you think that the outlook is actually is a positive one for the short-term future?
Yeah, I think there's so much, at least, opportunity for... You know, we're at early stages of these sort of new tracking methods, which already have the potential to recover a lot of sales from the previous generations. So we think about ad blocking, which has been like prevalent in Europe for 10, 15 years. And there's a massive market share of ad blockers, like 30%. So it's definitely in the short term, there's so much potential to recover these sales that have never been measured. And we're not just talking about, you know, reactions to the latest changes by Safari and Google and stuff, which naturally come with their own conversion uplift. But actually recovering these sales that we've never measured, there's a fantastic opportunity because we're so early in terms of adoption of some of these these newer tracking technologies.
It's going to be an interesting period to witness and observe, I think, and you're obviously going to be at the vanguard of that as far as Awin's concerned. So thanks so much for coming on to the podcast today, Stephen, and I'm sure we'll get you on again in the near future once the next big disruptive change occurs.
Let's not predict that one, but yeah, thanks so much, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Cheers.